have no idea what loss is. You have no idea what loss is.
I reckon it's got something to do with that girl.
It's got everything to do with that little girl.
I can take care of myself.
How many close calls have we had?
Can't be any worse out there. Can it? Every guy in this room is staring at you right now. Maybe they're staring at you. Maybe they're jealous of you. I'm just a girl. Not a threat. Oh, Ellie. I think they should be terrified of
me. Welcome to the world of The Last of Us. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for the Naughty Dog video game series and the HBO and Max and Sky Atlantic television series. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good. And we're here, another Last of Us podcast this week, my third time talking about the episode. This is, it's going to be our spoiler review for the episode, but no future spoilers here. I've already done that. Just to make sure that I've got three different episodes and to make sure that everybody's clear on what they're listening to. this is just our normal review that we're going to be doing. This is for Last of Us Season 2, Episode 1. We're back. We've started. Future Days. David, what did you think of the beginning?
I thought it was a strong start. As we mentioned last week, I know nothing about what the storyline is for this show moving forward. You know, I had played the first game. I didn't play the second game. Not yet, anyway. So I really have no clue about any of these characters, who was in the games, who wasn't. So I'm not comparing it to anything at all. Unlike you, which, you know, you've got much more knowledge of this than I have. I really thought it was a decent, strong start. You know, we've got this sort of, most of it has got this 5-year time jump, basically, apart from a little bit right at the very beginning. So we've got the characters a little bit older. They've moved on a little bit more. The relationship between Ellie and Joel has clearly become very fractious. You're sort of being introduced to all the new characters this season. And I mean, it doesn't give you any huge idea of the direction that they're going at the moment. You're just getting introduced to back into the world and, you know, who the new people are and the new faces and all that sort of stuff pretty much at this point. It's just nice to be back in this world, really.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, I ended up watching it 3 times. My sort of schedule, if you want to call it that, my process I ended up doing was the Sunday night watch, or Monday morning, depending on how you describe that, and then the immediate podcast, and then watched it again on Monday, and then did the spoiler episode, so spoiler future predictions, and then watched it again yesterday, then listened to Bold Moves podcast, which happens to come out on Tuesdays as well. I did my notes after my second watch because I was not going to do notes for the show late at night on a Sunday. So did my notes after the second watch and then got the notes ready and then did my... Because I was thinking about, you know, stuff as I was getting the notes down and all that. Then did the spoiler thing. I watched it one more time yesterday. Went from that pretty much straight into Bold Moves podcast. And then here we are. Which I had planned and thought to do that. I didn't know if I was actually definitely going to watch it 3 times. Because I don't do things like that. I don't watch the same thing or play the same thing 3 times in the same, well, in a matter of days. Because my brain just doesn't really work like that. But I suppose I have a particular purpose and a particular reason for doing that. You watched it once, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. There's no rule that you have to, you know, as long as you watch it once at least. You know,
yes.
And you have, you've watched it, you can give your opinion. For me, I loved it. I know that it might not have sounded that way after my Sunday podcast, the sort of initial thing. And the more and more I got into it and the more I thought about it and the more, obviously, everybody was talking about it and I was getting stuck in those conversations. And Once I'd done definitely my second watch, because I enjoyed it more each time, which again, my brain doesn't usually work like that. Yeah, just enjoyed it more each time. Was able to actually take, because there's a lot of little details in this episode as well, both for like game people and for, TV people, if that's how you want to describe them. But yeah, loved being back in with these characters, loved seeing this world come to life, as I mentioned before. Loved seeing certain bits from the games. I enjoyed the combination. Now that I kind of understand, or think I understand, the structure of what they're doing in this episode, because that was the thing that just that was the one thing that just really threw me off in the first episode. I was like, okay, you're doing the structure differently to what I thought you were maybe going to do. But once I got like a handle on that, listen to the official podcast. That's Troy, Neil, and Craig, and they would like. Because it's useful to also hear, like, okay, I really enjoyed this thing. I don't quite get why you did certain bits. And then to actually listen to those guys explain, like, hey, when we did this, when we did that, those are the reasons. So that was all part of, so I really, really enjoyed the process of that. There's two scenes in this episode that I think are basically near perfect replicas of the game, the same, like, game scenes. But I enjoyed the new stuff as well, like with Eugene and the whole Gale thing and Joel. Of course, none of that really happens in the game. Kat's involvement was kind of interesting. You've also got, like, I think his name's Benjamin, so Tommy and Marie's son. If I do call her Marlena at one point, I always get those two. I get that. I don't get the characters mixed up, but I've done it a number of times. I get their names mixed up. I think it's maybe because they're both women and they both have names beginning with M. I don't know. Sometimes it happens. So if I call her Marlena at one point, we know obviously Marlena's dead. That was the leader of the Fireflies. If I do that at some point, then that's just what that is. But yeah, her with Benjamin and the whole, people inside the walls, monster outside the walls, bit of Uncle Joel going on. I really enjoyed as well, like the bits with, like the spring stuff with him talking to Dina. That's all kind of new stuff as well. So, and we knew we were getting new bits as well. We knew we were getting new stuff. Obviously, Catherine O'Hara's character being completely brand new. So yeah, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It is very much. Because you don't associate this with The Last of Us. It's very much a kind of, okay, we've been away from the show for 2 years, settle back in, which most shows have to do that nowadays. Even with something, just a different example, something like Yellow Jackets, which in its own different way is weird and wild and crazy and all that sort of thing. And even with that, when it came back with its two episodes this year, it didn't get into like the weird, wild stuff. It was a settling back in episode. Maybe that's like a streaming thing that we do now when we're away from shows for 2 years. And you come back and you just have like, hey, here's what Joel's doing, here's what Ellie's doing, and all these kind of little things. So I get that. And it is also very much, I think even for TV people and for game people, you can tell this is very much a calm before the storm type episode, especially with like our ending episode cliffhanger. So yeah, it's not, the crazy action like Last of Us stuff that we know, but it's selling back in, it's doing what it needs to do. So yeah, really enjoyed the process I had with this episode. It was a lot, don't get me wrong. I spent a lot of time this week with The Last of Us, but that's never been a problem. So yeah, I'm just very excited to see where we go moving forward as well. I think that's it for the pre-talk. We do have a bunch of scenes and stuff to get into and some housekeeping. So let's crack on with that.
Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link, which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system, which is usually in the bottom right hand corner, to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps, and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show.
All right, recently on Entertainment Talk, of course, we do actually make other podcasts than just Last of Us. You might be forgiven this week if you've scrolled through the site and gone, hey, they just do Last of Us. Why are they called Entertainment Talk? We do make podcasts about other things. It's just how it is at the moment. Gaming Talk, we do talk about video games as well. We did our Gaming Talk podcast yesterday. We talked about Sabrina Carpenter being added to Fortnite, which I thought was just fun. Some interesting conversations around like Bungie and Marathon. They've revealed their new game, like fully revealed it. And some conversations about how The Last of Us kind of ties into that as well. So we talked about that. And also did, because I've been playing Uncharted, I did like a comparison between, of course, both Naughty Dog games with Uncharted and with Last of Us. The kind of interesting differences I've noticed between Nathan Drake and Joel, and how they both behave when they're killing people. So that was fun to do as well. Excuse me, over on the other podcast, of course, did my bonus spoiler predictions episode. I know I said I was going to do that on Thursday or Friday, but I had time on Monday, and I watched it for the second time on Monday, and I thought, why don't I just do it now rather than waiting later for some reason? So that might not be Thursday, Friday. It might be... those might come out before these ones. Plus, it gets me a chance to kind of get those spoilery talk off my chest, if you know what I mean. The sort of spoilery thoughts I might have. So that is a bonus spoiler predictions episode. So again, if you don't know the story, you haven't played the games, don't listen to that episode. You can maybe go back when we finish the season or something, listen to that. It's, you know, up to you. But if you're a TV-only person, stay away from that podcast. Speaking of other ones, if you want to go back a little bit and listen to my initial review, of course, Last of Us Season 2, Episode 1, simply called 201 Review Spoiler Free, so you can check that one out. Speaking of Yellow Jackets, which still hasn't been renewed for Season 4 yet, covered the season finale, Season 3, Episode 10, so covered the latest of that, and that's off the air for now. What else do we have? Of course, we've still got our spoiler and spoiler-free preview. Those are separate episodes, so you can listen to those if you still want that. Over on Gaming Talk from a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the Switch 2 being presented, AI in video games, and we talked about Ubisoft's IP. And yeah, that's pretty much what we've been doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Yeah, that's what we're doing at the moment. All right, let's break into... feels like I haven't done this for a while, actually. Yes, beginning Season 2, Episode 1, Future Days. Joel swears to Ellie that his story about the Fireflies is true. Ellie hesitates before replying, okay, and they walk towards the safe settlement of Jackson, Wyoming. Now, for someone like me, it's a great scene, all that kind of stuff. I think this is more in here to sort of, for the TV people who haven't maybe replayed the games or... you know, have this story ingrained in their brain or whatever. I think this is, particularly because of all the tension throughout the rest of the episode between Joel and Ellie, it's a good reminder of like, okay, if you don't quite get why there's the tension between these two and the lie that Joel has told Ellie, whether or not you think she thinks that's a lie in that moment, because you're always supposed to kind of, okay, what do you take away from the okay? Does that to you mean that she believes him, or, you know, that's why that's put there as a cliffhanger? I think it's a good reminder and a good kind of little nugget for that right at the start. Plus, I think, again, coming back from 2 years, it's a good kind of little, rather than actually coming back and just jumping straight 5 years forward, it's a good little reminder of like, okay, here's where we actually left off, just in case you kind of, you know, been doing whatever you've been doing for 2 years, I suppose. So I think this does service the TV audience more, and I get that and I understand that. Still a great scene, and it's interesting as well because Joel, Troy, who also is Joel, Craig and Neil, said that because when you finish the first game and you get the okay and then the credits just come up, and then when you start the second game, because the second game doesn't kick off with this, it was great to actually see, okay, once she says okay and the camera cuts back to him, he doesn't have much of a reaction, but again, you're supposed to have your own interpretation of, okay, she said okay, he gives his look, what do you, again, your own interpretation thing, what do you think that means? So yeah, all that being said, I think it's just a good way to kind of just get a little reminder of that little bit and then kind of move on from there. What do you think of the opening scene here?
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice little sort of start. It's funny because with a lot of these shows that disappear for 2 years, I end up going, I have no idea where we are. I need to go onto YouTube and watch a full recap, a 15-minute recap video of the first season to remind myself. With this, I didn't feel that was necessary.
Seek out a recap, you mean?
Yeah, for me to seek out a recap. I remember him lying to her to protect her. I couldn't remember exactly at the time what he lied about. I know it was something to do with the hospitals and the fireflies, and it was to do with him saying that they'd found other immune people, wasn't it? I think as a way of sort of not having to deliver her to the fireflies.
Yeah.
It was one of those things that, like, I might go and watch a recap afterwards just to remind myself of everything that happened that might be pertinent. But I didn't really feel a need to sort of, okay, I have no idea what's going on. And I think partly because of the fact that most of it is that sort of 5-year time jump. Mm-hmm. And that, whilst, you know, when we move into it, you have that tension between Joel and Ellie. Do we actually know that she knows he lied to her?
It's supposed to be your interpretation. That's what Neil's kind of always said, is like, okay, what do you think she means by okay?
He
never kind of says like, oh, I intended you to specifically think this. It's sort of like imagine you're standing next to them and she says okay. Joel might think one thing, you might think another thing. It's kind of up to you. So
yeah. Yeah, but it's not sort of, and that isn't clear after the 5-year time jump. There is clearly tension between Joel and Ellie, and we don't know whether that tension comes from the fact that she believes he lied, or whether something over those 5 years has come out, or that, you know, that isn't.
I think you're supposed to question that, like, because when you jump again in the game 5 years, you're supposed to question, like, okay, does Ellie know something else? Is it still just that okay that's sitting there in her head? Again, you're supposed to have your kind of, there's no sort of definitive right or wrong answer to what you're asking, sort of. So
yeah.
I also think if you didn't include this, again, wasn't the scene I personally needed, but I get why it's in here. I think if you cut that out and you then go to, because the first time we see Ellie is in the barn and she's like clearly pissed off or something. Again, if you're somebody who doesn't, you know, hasn't thought about Last of Us or whatever, and you go, oh, season 2's come back, season 1 was great, I'll check that out, you wouldn't be mistaken for being like, okay, why is Ellie so annoyed? Like, what's, you know, if you sort of couldn't remember or something. So I think it services that, which is...
Yes, it's a really interesting, well-written little shortcut. You go, okay, yeah, like I say, I didn't remember exactly what he lied about. I just remember we knew he was lying about something, and so I mean, it does its job perfectly well for the TV audience, I think.
Speaking of introductions and stuff, in Salt Lake City, a group of surviving fireflies are burying their dead from the hospital massacre. One of them, Abby, played by Caitlin Dever, insists they track down Joel, but is dissuaded initially by Owen, who suggests, yes, I'll help you, but we need to find another group. Isaac's name gets dropped here as well, and she goes down to one of the particular graves, puts another firefly pendant on it, turns around and says, because they're the rest of the group are discussing trying to, you know, find Joel and whatever. And she says, yes, we want to kill him, but I want to do it slowly, specifically. So this is a very interesting place to put this, and an interesting... So the actual construction of this scene is completely new, although conversations that these characters have about the same thing still happen, but it's not structured like this. And I think what they're trying to do here, you can tell this is sort of probably what the next day after Joel's been in the hospital or come to the hospital. And I did like the little nugget of information where I think it's Abby that says it. She says, like, hey, we should have gone after, obviously she's very like hot-headed in the situation, and says, you know, we should have gone after them straight away. And Owen, who often in the games is one of the more level-headed out of these five, six, however many there are, and says, like, he got away in our only working vehicle. So we for that reason, we sort of couldn't go after him. Not that that was ever a question I had, really, but it's a good little way of kind of doing that. So yeah, this, the rest of this group is some of the ones we mentioned in the cast. You've got Manny here, who you would have seen Danny Ramirez from Captain America. You've got Mel, who I remember you said to me she was played by somebody in The Runaways. I couldn't quite remember who it was. And then somebody on Twitter mentioned the same thing. And I had this light bulb moment. I was like, oh my God, that's like, because I really like that character from The Runaways. And as I made very clear in our preview, I do not like Mel at all. So obviously part of acting is going to be, okay, she played a character I really liked, and then she's going to play a character I really don't like. So yeah, and then you've got Nora there, who again is the same Tatiana, I think her name is. She's going to be playing Jade in Intergalactic. So she's there, and then Owen is the other one, and then Abby is the one who's clearly the main one here. So yeah, this is our introduction to this group, and the name drop Isaac, which I think is interesting because if I have a pause like this, by the way, it's because I'm trying to think of how to explain something without spoilers, by the way. It's not because I've gotten stuck. By the time we get to that, there is no conversation in the game of we need to meet up with Isaac for the first time. Because this sounds like, okay, like the Fireflies are gone. What's this group going to do now? Like they have a goal, but okay, what are they going to do? And then Owen mentions Isaac, and it's interesting because, okay, clearly this is again in between the 5 years, so by the time you skip the 5 years, they're well associated with Isaac's group. I don't think it's a spoiler to say, okay, they'll eventually find Isaac's group and become sort of a part of that. So I thought that was an interesting way to kind of again establish those little bits of nuggets of information. I think I get why they put this in here, and I think they give you just enough to not give you too much in this scene, I think. Because I'll be perfectly honest, I remember when this scene came up and they said to us in like some of the previews and stuff that we'll be telling Abby's story a bit earlier, and myself as well as many other gaming people were like, okay, we're not quite sure about that. And then they started this, and this came in way earlier in the episode than I thought it was going to.
Oh yeah, the second scene.
When they started showing this, I was like, okay, I will be interesting to see what they tell us here. But I think, again, after listening to Craig and Neil explain why they put this in here, I think they did a good job. The scene itself is, you know, great, and really great acting, especially from Caitlin. So yeah, anyway, that's what I'll say about this scene here. What did you think of the introduction of Abby and the Salt Lake crew?
Well, yeah, I mean, coming at it as a TV viewer, it seemed to make sense to me that, you know, that group seems to be an antagonistic kind of group which are going to cross paths with Joel and Ellie at some point. I mean, that that seems to be how they're sort of introduced. They sort of name dropped, as you mentioned, Isaac, who I don't know exactly who. I mean, I know it's Jeffrey Wright's playing the character, mm-hmm. but I mean, other than that, I don't know anything really about him. It structurally it made sense to me. She looks like she's going to be kind of an interesting character when she certainly comes across Joel anyway, eventually, which presumably she does.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. And then we actually go 5 years later in 2028, which isn't actually that far away from where we are now. Ellie and Joel have become increasingly estranged from each other. During a combat training, Jesse orders restraint against Ellie for fear of Joel's retaliation. But Ellie is not happy about that. She wants equal treatment. And there's a few little bits in here, like a few nods, a few smiles. There was actually one bit that made me laugh on my second and third watch. You know, when it's rare that you laugh at The Last of Us. Jesse, because there's obviously continuous conversation through this episode on who's going to the dance, who's taking who, all this kind of thing, like an interesting social thing to put into the episode. And Jesse's asking Ellie about it, and she says, she's sort of like, yeah, I guess I'll go a part of the community. And the two guys, I don't know who this other guy is, by the way, joke of like, oh, you're part of the community. And the camera flicks over to this other guy, he smiles, Ellie turns around to him, and he's like, oh, I sort of got caught smiling. I thought that made me laugh on the second and third time. First time I was just, you know, seeing what the hell was going on. I something I like both in the game and here is it's not just a case of, okay, Ellie's living here and she's just annoyed at Joel because of, again, however you interpret what she thinks of the okay and all that, but because it was such a big deal of the whole, you know, immunity and you're the one who's going to sort of save the world, and that it's something that will is obviously to do with her personally. It's not just to do with Joel. So her carrying around this thing, and you can see this throughout the episode as well, her carrying this thing with her of like, she thought she was special. I mean, she is special because she's Ellie still, but the specific immunity thing, and especially with Joel saying to her, oh, there was other people, like they're doing this, you know, it takes away that speciality, has left its mark on Ellie. And even when it comes to like the way she's carrying herself and the way she's probably feeling about herself, you can see how that's affecting, not because, oh, it's Jesse's fault, or it's this guy's fault, or it's Dina's fault, or anybody else, but there's this anger that she's carrying with her. And I like that it's not just, oh, I'm smiling and happily and fine, oh, there's Joel, now I'm annoyed, now I'm sad, because she's carrying this thing with her. And I thought they did that really, really well throughout this episode. Because, she knows it's not Jesse's fault, but then you notice as well, and again, they do this really well in the games and in the show, when it's sort of, because there's what, 2-3 different instances where someone says to Ellie, I'm going to do this, or I can't do this, or I'm not going to do that because Joel said something, or because Joel's involved, because it comes up later with Tommy as well. And when he's saying about like, hey, I didn't want this guy fully fit, essentially, in case he damaged you, but Ellie's not bothered about that. But one of the reasons he's concerned about that is, hey, I don't want to get you injured and then Joel finds out. And you just get this reflection from Ellie of like, not bothered what he thinks. I wanted you to go full effort with this and I wanted the full thing. Because Jesse doesn't even really kind of say, oh, I didn't want this guy at full strength because he'll hurt you. It was more, he'll hurt you. Not that you're bothered by that, but because Joel will get involved. And that's that line there for Ellie of like, I don't really care if this guy hurt me. I wanted you to go, you know, full throttle, so to speak, or whatever. And you didn't do that because you were concerned about what Joel thought. And I just love the way that that sits there. And she doesn't have to, you know, stand there and explain that. You can see it on her face. I thought that was great. So, yeah, what do you think of this scene here?
Yeah, it's a good introduction to sort of where she is now, when we meet her 5 years later. And you starting to see that sort of that there is clearly a fracture in the relationship between her and Joel, and you know, she has become hardened and she is, you know, training and is wants to be, doesn't want to be treated with kid gloves, you know. She wants the, I mean, sort of understandably, because you know, if she's training to go out and fight things, she doesn't want to be, you know, she wants to be as prepared as humanly possible, and so that sort of makes sense. And yeah, you know, her annoyance at the fact that the reason that he won't go for it is not because he's worried about hurting her, but because he's scared of Joel. That also tells you.
I understand that from Jesse's perspective as well.
Oh yeah, no, like, exactly.
You don't want to be pissing Joel off.
Yeah, which you know I get, but you can see why, as you know, a 19-year-old woman, she's annoyed by that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so. Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting sort of dynamic, and although he's sort of her father figure, but not her actual father, and you know, there's all that going on, and it does come back to, we don't know exactly what caused that relationship to fracture in the way it has. You know, we know that Joel and Ellie are more estranged, but we don't know exactly the reason why at this point. And
you mean past the okay?
Yeah, past the okay. Yeah. You know, I mean, because there is that, but we don't know whether there was another incident or something else going on. Was Joel sort of overbearing? Was he overly controlling? And it sort of hints at that maybe he was overstepping in trying to protect her when he was there and she's just got sick of it. I mean, is it just that? Is there something else? It's not entirely clear. Is it just a case of she's a teenager and, you know, he's a father figure and, you know,
teenagers
that relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's sort of an angsty teenager. I mean, we don't know.
It could be a combination of all these things.
So. Yeah. And yeah. I mean, it may just be all of them. Who knows? So yeah, it's interesting how it's done in such a subtle sort of way, you know, mm-hmm. without specifically writing, I'm mad at you because.
Good stuff. Joel's brother Tommy takes Ellie off patrol at Joel's request, but Ellie insists on following through with her assignment. So this is to do with when they're out in the wild and it's all snowy and everything, and she's getting some sniping training from Tommy. Again, further development of her kind of, again, she's getting older. If we remember in season one, it was a case of, you know, I remember some scenes with Tess and Joel, like every time she would turn around and go, hey, you know, if you guys gave me a gun, no. Kind of thing. And that was like, okay, you're 13, 14, whatever, we just, you know, we're the two adults that have got to sort of look after you, and we don't want you having a gun. And then, you know, you go through all the development stuff and her getting older, and now she's actually training to use a gun. So I think that's a good bit with that. Interesting, again, structural thing. I wish I had talked about this in a spoiler sense on my spoiler podcast, but of course, sometimes you record an episode, you post it, and then you realize hours later or a day later that you forgot to talk about something, and these things just happen. This is in the game, and you do walk around as Ellie, and you have conversations, similar kind of conversations, with Tommy, and it is, obviously, you've still got the sniper, so it's still long-distance shooting and that. Some of the same placement of, like, because I remember there was a bit where you're aiming, and you know, like, the big sign when they've switched the cam around and you see the infected get shot in the leg, that sign is, like, kind of there in kind of the same place. I thought that was a good nod to that. So this is in the game, but this is also in the game connected to something else. And we've not seen that bit yet. And I wonder, I could probably just put, I don't think it's a spoiler. I think you're gonna maybe see this again because it seems like this is maybe a regular thing for them both anyway. Like, do we think this is the first time they've gone out together, or they're maybe gonna arrange to do that again? But I think when we possibly see this again later, if we do, that's more of an if, that it actually gets connected to the other bit I'm thinking of, and that bit is the bit I can't quite talk about yet. So I remember when I saw this, I was like, okay, I get you're playing with the structure a little bit, but like, it's a bit early for this other part. And then we kind of saw it was like just a general training sort of thing. So it again makes sense as to why it's here, but they're playing with the structure in kind of interesting ways. But again, very good kind of video game to TV part, I suppose, as well. And yeah, well, the thing they're actually talking about here is, like we just mentioned, because Joel doesn't want Ellie on the patrol. He wants her kind of on the wall because he's worried about her. And of course, again, that would annoy Ellie for the reasons that other characters don't know about yet, such as Jesse and such as Tommy, with the whole, hey, by the way, Joel went to a hospital and killed a bunch of people, and she's the cure for this and that, whatever. Yeah, so again, it's a case where like she can't really talk to these other people about what's happened and has to sort of do what she's doing. This is a bit more of a comedy angle on it, the whole sort of, because no one's around, she's screaming about like, I've been bitten, I'm immune, and Tommy's like, whoa, you've got to calm down. And it's again like, mate, you've got an angsty sort of 19-year-old that you're trying to tell to calm down. So yeah, good luck with that. I wasn't sure what to take from this line, but there's a bit where he goes, you and my brother, same damn person. Whether it's for him, he kind of I wonder if that's maybe a sort of you both don't listen to my advice, maybe.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure what to. There's a couple of little bits in this episode that even I wasn't quite sure of, like what exactly that means. Anyway, what did you think of this sniping training scene?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny that sort of her like screaming at the top of her lungs about sort of, yeah, you know, I'm immune, I'm immune. I thought that was quite entertaining. And yeah, you know. Again, it sort of feeds into this thing about Joel clearly is still being quite overprotective of Ellie, which I mean is understandable. But equally, from Ellie's point of view, if she does believe him, you know, if she did believe him that she isn't the only person that's immune, then, from her point of view, it's like, well, I don't need to be treated that differently. I'm not that special. So, you know, there are other immune people. So, you know, and arguably, as she says, actually, I think there is a line in there where she says, if anybody should be going out, it should be me because I'm safer than anybody else because if I get bitten, it doesn't matter.
I see her point. I see her point.
And
Although, yeah, the rest of them are like, okay, because there's a little bit in the court thing later when it's like, Tommy sort of says, hey, if it was me and Joel, we'd be all right. And everyone, even Maria was like, why? What difference would it make? Kind of thing. But I think we'll get to that a bit later.
yeah, and
But I can see with other characters where it's sort of, okay, yeah, you are the safer one, but you're still kind of young and this and that. So,
yeah, I
yeah.
mean there is that. Plus, there is also the thing of if she does go out and she does get bitten, it then, you know, to avoid getting herself shot in the head, she's by one of the other teammates. It has then got to go, no, I'm immune, which, you know, is not something she's supposed to be telling people. So there's also that for Joel to consider as well. So, whilst on one side I do see where Ellie's coming from, I also see where Joel's coming from as well with that. You know, I can see why Ellie's frustrated about it because she's like, you know, I should be out on patrol. I should be able to do these things. I'm a decent shot. There's, you know, everybody else goes out on patrol. Why shouldn't I? And on top of that, I am also immune But that, if, like I say, if she goes out and gets bitten, then that causes its own problems. So it's an interesting one, that. But I thought this was a really nice little scene between Tommy and Ellie, certainly.
Also, this as well, as much as I clearly love both games, and other people have sort of said this before that I've agreed with, and I think this is just down to, okay, this story is about Joel and Ellie, especially, you know, the first game and that, because it's about their whole journey together. I do sometimes feel that Tommy gets underserviced sometimes, so having this in here a bit more, having obviously giving him a son as well, I think is very, very good. Plus, you know, you've got Gabriel Luna, you might as well give him more to do, I suppose, because very good actor. What do you think? Do you think Tommy's like, again, I know you haven't experienced the rest of the second thing or whatever, what do you think of like Tommy's treatment story-wise? Do you think he gets like underserviced sometimes?
I think he possibly did a bit in the first season, but then the first season was so focused on Joel and Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I seem to remember for the main cast for the first season was literally Joel and Ellie, and everybody else was guest cast.
I think
This time around, in the actual credits, the main cast are Joel, Ellie, Tommy, Dina, and Jesse. So those are your sort of core characters, and then everybody else is guest cast after that.
Yeah.
So I mean, in the first season, I sort of understand that. I mean, it's difficult to say after one episode. I thought he was used perfectly well in this episode so far. But, you know, we'll have to see as we go through the season where it ends up.
Yeah. Anyway, Joel is fixing something. Dina walks in and they talk about how to fix it. They also talk about what's up with Ellie, because Joel is confused about it and stuff, and Dina realizes he's in therapy, but then also agrees not to tell anybody else about that. I think they did a very good, and again, this is all new stuff, not the characters obviously, but the scene. I liked how, like, oh, someone walks in, hey there, kiddo, and you wonder if, because that's obviously calls Ellie kiddo and stuff, although I don't know how much he's doing that nowadays. And they give you a little, I thought it was designed to throw you off of like, oh, Ellie's in here, they're going to finally have a conversation about something, but it's actually Dina. I really like this little bit of development towards him and Dina, and it's not, this isn't really quite done in the same way as the game, but I quite liked sort of seeing like a half-third daughter be added to his situation, I suppose. I thought, not that it's like going to be a grand plot thing, I think, or whatever. I liked a little kind of bit from Joel here where it's like, hey, they had this whole box full of stuff and they were going to throw it away. All they need to do is replace the springs. And I was kind of listening to him saying that and I was like, okay, yeah, that does sound like a really stupid thing to do, is to throw away this whole, if it just needed new springs. It also kind of shows, I mean, I don't know how much knowledge it takes to learn something like that, for example. Also does kind of show that, like, when she comes in and says like, hey, that is it, someone's not doing something or whatever she says, and like the things aren't generally kind of going exactly how they want from both sides of what they're doing. And I think it does a good job here of just showing like Joel still knows what he's doing with this stuff. Because seemingly, okay, if they're talking about throwing away this whole box of electrical things, and what, Joel is the only one who comes up and says, like, oh no, we just got to replace the springs. Or, like, they handed it to Joel, for example, and said, like, hey, how do we fix this? I just think it was a good little bit for his character as well, and I quite like that. I also did like as well, and this reminded me of the Switch cartridges, because he's sitting there kind of testing her a bit and going, hey, how do you think that we test them? She's like, do you lick them? I thought that was pretty funny. And that reminded me of the Switch cartridges. For those of you who don't know, with the Switch, and apparently with the Switch 2, one thing they did to discourage kids from putting the Switch cartridges in their mouth is make them taste very nasty. And I accidentally did that once, because if you touch the cartridges and then you've got like the residue of whatever it is on your fingers and you put that near your mouth, you'll taste that as well. And it just kind of reminded me of that. So, because we've been talking about the Switch 2 recently. So, but yeah, just her kind of guesswork of do we lick them? I could both tell, like, okay, yeah, that's clearly not what you do. So, just a good little, again, this is kind of, okay, what's Joel doing? What's Dina doing? And then kind of combining these two things, I thought was done pretty well. And then you just do get a nice little, just a nice little moment between them of the sort of, I guess, establishment of trust. Because she could have very well jokingly, as a teenager, because she's supposed to be about the same age as Ellie, could have been like, hey, no, I'm going to tell somebody else that you're in therapy. But saw the kind of, that this is a new thing for Joel, that he kind of is trying something. And I liked the sort of respect from Dina of, like, no, I'm not going to tell anybody. I'll keep that to myself. Just thought it was nice. So, yeah, nothing really bad happens in the scene, does it? So what did you think of Joel and Dina here?
It's a nice introduction to Dina. I do really like Dina as a character. I think she's an interesting one because she's sort of a little bit season one Ellie, you know, of sort of being interested in the world and interesting in you know, what is going on around her. You know, like she wants to learn about sort of, you know, what Joel's doing, and and she has this sort of bubbliness to her, which is a bit more like Ellie was when we were sort of introduced to her, whereas she's become much harder now. So it's quite an interesting character, that particularly, you know, where she ends up by the end of the episode, you know, and I think she's played wonderfully well. She's really fun, and she's just sort of seems to be trying to keep a positive attitude, and the two of them together, but you know, whether it's Dina and Joel or Dina and Ellie, I think she's a very fun character. Yeah, really well played. I think I'm gonna like watching her. She's interesting so far.
Yeah, I noticed from like a lot of the conversations I've read in the last couple of days, people really, really, really love Isabella. Isabella Merced, I think her name is, in this show. Like, a lot of people say, okay, yeah, we got a lot of new cast in this episode and that, some of which we only saw for a little bit, but like really, really stood out to people. So, and in an already stacked, talented cast, I mean, you've got Catherine O'Hara, you've got Pedro Pascal, you've got Bella Ramsey, you've got young Mazzino, I think his name is, and a bunch of other people, Caitlin Dever as well. For someone to stand out like that, and Gabriel Luna as well, I think is really, really excellent. So, yeah, very, very nice. Maria, I got her name right, chats to Joel about how things are going in Jackson. Joel admits a struggle with managing things, including having too many people come in. There's a little meter that he's talking about as well. Benjamin, Tommy, and Maria's son enter the room. Joel is happy to see him, and they talk about the settlement and keeping monsters out and keeping people in. Tommy comes back and tells Joel he was sniping infected, but says he was doing it on his own. There's a little look from him there as well, and I think he sort of glances back at Maria slightly, doesn't he? I don't know if Maria knows that Ellie was there, but we can have our own interpretation. Sniping infected him on his own. As Joel goes to leave, Maria reminds him how he was once a refugee, and Joel gives you know, you can tell there's the face drop there, isn't there? Because you go from 1 minute of like being playful and fun with Benjamin and like, ah, oh, you shot me kind of thing, and then like, hey, Joel, this was a situation, and just the, I mean, it's great acting from Pedro. He does some extraordinary facial acting, at least that's what I call it, in this episode as well, one of which we'll talk about in the next scene. Look, there's a whole conversation I could particularly have on the refugee stuff, particularly what's going on in this country with the whole stop the boats thing. Not going to get fully into that here, otherwise we'll be here for a long time. But I thought that was an interesting kind of, because this isn't a sort of like, Joel hasn't suddenly turned into a raving madman going, hey, we need to deport all of them, which is what some people are doing over here. It's kind of, he's actually got a good reason for it rather than just get rid of them all because that would apparently solve all of our problems. But his angle on sort of, I really want to take them all in. We are in an apocalypse, so we don't have like, you know, civilized supply situation. But then saying like we just sort of can't do it. I know he does get a bit carried away at one point of like, hey, yeah, we just turn them away. We just flat out turn them away if they come back or if they come in. And I didn't mind Joel sort of getting a bit frustrated with that. And then you had Maria on the other side kind of like, I can understand your side, but like they need help, and you know you don't want to turn these people away, but if you just can't take them in and you just don't have enough stuff, then you just can't do it. And you can see there's just this real struggle there with Joel, which I thought was interesting. And I quite like the placement of, again, Last of Us is something that will raise your hopes and then smack them to the ground. But this thing of like, he's happy with Benjamin, Tommy's come back, they're talking about that, and then they just settle in that little refugee comment, and then just the face drop as he's walking off to therapy. So but yeah, again, Benjamin, brand new for the show, give something more for Maria and Tommy to deal with, to have. So yeah, very, very good stuff. Yeah, what do you think of this scene?
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation that they're sort of having. I mean, the stuff was sort of, you know, Uncle Joel, I think, was kind of sweet, and you know, I think that was a nice way of showing that, you know, Joel isn't a sort of grumpy old monster the entire time. He's kind of, you know, that's sort of interesting.
Still got that fatherhood aspect in him.
Yeah, you know, that is still there. Tommy lying about sort of, you know, taking Ellie out for training. So yeah, that's an interesting little bit of dynamic. And the stuff about the refugees, I mean, Joel does have a point. I think the analogy he uses of like, you know, yeah, but if your lifeboat is overflowing, you just, you know, if you bring so many people in, it tips it over. And the, you know, there's a, not comparing to real world examples, but that's the example he uses in the show, I think. And he does have a point, you know, in the situation that they are in that they are a small settlement, they have limited resources, and you know, he wants to save everybody, but you have to make sure that you are stable to be able to do that. You know, that your society can afford to take on those extra people. And I mean, we don't know exactly what the setup is, and it's very different to what you're talking about in terms of the real world now, because, you know, that's an entirely different thing. But in the situation that they're in the show, where they are, but clearly they're working very hard to try and make sure that they're providing for the people that are there. In that situation, you can sort of think, you can see Joel's point of view, but you can also see Maria's point of view of like, well, yes, you know, we should be helping everybody. And it's like, well, yeah, we should in an ideal world if we had the resources to do it. But, you know, I mean, that also comes with its own problems. So it's an interesting one that, you know,
where you can just kick Seth out and then have someone take his spot.
Well,
yeah, not kill, but just kick him out. So yeah, so there we go with that. Joel has his session with psychotherapist, there we go. Yes, Gail. I knew it wasn't a physio, that's a completely different thing.
Yes.
Gail, played by the wonderful Catherine O'Hara, who admits her resentment towards him for killing her husband, Eugene. Overcome with emotion, Joel confesses, not in detail, but says, I saved her. Yeah, great to see Catherine O'Hara again. Of course, I know her most from Schitt's Creek, where she plays the mum in a more comedic role. I liked what Craig Mazin pointed out on the official podcast. He said, like, when you get actors that are known for more comedic stuff, they often end up being really, really good dramatic actors. One example he used, he's mentioned Breaking Bad with obviously Bryan Cranston going from Malcolm in the Middle to Breaking Bad. You could kind of use the same example a little bit with Jimmy McGill from
Well, yeah, I mean,
what's the actor's name?
Bob Odenkirk is a comedic actor as well.
Yeah. Which in his Breaking Bad time is more the comedic stuff, but then when you get to Better Call Saul, there's definitely a lot more sort of drama for his character there. And same kind of thing, I guess you could apply to Catherine here as well. So so Eugene was one of your three death predictions, it seems. I mean, we haven't seen him die on screen. We don't know what's actually happened. It seems like you might have got one correct in the first episode. I was thinking, when she mentions that, I was like, there's one for David. any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, we don't actually know what happened with Eugene, do we? I mean, we know he's listed as a guest role in the credits.
Been cast, yeah.
So he has been cast. So presumably that's a flashback of some sort, unless Joel didn't actually kill him and he's still out there in the world somewhere. But presumably that's a flashback, and we're going to get to see what happened and, why Joel killed him. But maybe we're going to get to see that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But clearly she is not happy about it, which is sort of interesting given that he's then gone to her for therapy, which is an odd choice. I mean, okay, the options are probably limited. I can't imagine there are that many therapists around in the post-apocalyptic sort of world. But I mean...
looks like a needed job, really. Like, that's something very valuable.
Yes, completely valuable. But, Catherine O'Hara was great in that role because there is a sort of dark humour to that.
Although
she's acting it straight, she's fantastic, and there is a certain amount of sort of dark, cynical humor to, you know, the fact that she's drinking and the way she's kind of
when he's like, "That's not your first one of the day, is it?" I thought that was good.
So she's fantastic, it often holds true that people who are known for comedy can be fantastic dramatic actors. Comedy can be a lot harder to do, I think.
Difficult timing and stuff as well.
Yeah, because it lives or dies on the timing and the performance. Whereas with drama, you can sort of, it is possible to get away with a bit more by, you know, sort of clever camera work and directing and edits and stuff, whereas comedy, it's much harder to hide that sort of stuff. So, comedic actors tend to be probably more accomplished. It's no great surprise that they're well accomplished dramatic actors as well, you know.
Yeah, certainly. Look, both their acting in this scene is incredible, but that shot of like, when she actually manages to break him down a little bit and like, did you hurt her? And I love the kind of, because obviously that's when you're having a therapy session like this, and of course the context here is different because it's post-apocalyptic, and someone asks you like, okay, this thing happened, did you hurt this person that you care about? And the immediate like head shake, no, and you can tell the barriers have been broken down there. And then when she says like, what did you do, there's just this pause and this like facial change from Pedro or from Joel. And then, just stands up and says, I saved her. Camera's like really close up in his face as well. Like he's really, really got to nail that part. And, that was absolutely brilliant from him. So, again, that's the second kind of part of the facial acting. I talked about the first one with sort of Maria mentioning the refugees, and then he sort of has a face drop. And this is like a different facial emotion thing for him to do as well. I thought again though, when they cut over to Catherine and zooms in on her face, and it's the sort of the way she says like, okay, what did you do, the sort of gotta get the focus in there, I thought that was done fantastically well. So very, very good stuff there. Moving on to one of my favorite scenes, I mean, I loved all the scenes, but I have two particular favourite ones. While clearing out a group of infected in an abandoned supermarket, Ellie is confronted by a new type capable of stalking her and moving silently. She kills it after it bites her, and later reports its existence to the council in Jackson. So yes, this is our introduction to stalkers in the show. They are a absolute bastard to deal with. They will, do exactly what I mean, I don't need to describe it because you saw it on the screen. They will scurry around corners. They will try to bait you to coming after them. But then even if you sort of run towards them, they'll try to flank you again and all that sort of thing. And that they'll do things like, because you've got like the grabbing mechanic, like when an infected or a person grabs you, you've got to smash square a lot of times to sort of, get the character out of the struggle. So even when like this stalker's on top of her, you'd have to be mashing square so you get them off them. Thing I really love about this though, what was I going to say? Yeah, the bottle thing. There's one thing I want to say about the interaction here between Dina and Ellie. Now, bearing in mind I watched this three times, and I tried to pay even more attention to this on the second and third, because the first time, I don't know what's going to, I can think I know what's going to happen, but I don't know what's going to happen moment to moment, scene to scene. Apart from the, use the bottle, I'll admit I haven't got a clue what these two said to each other. I get that it was sort of, because she does the count before, like, okay, count how many infected you can hear, so they prepare themselves. But when they're doing the sort of point bit, and okay, I get when Ellie goes, throat cut, blood splatter, and then she smiles. I understand what that bit is. And it didn't ultimately end up mattering to me, because I understood, like, okay, they're just trying to take down these two infected. Love the nod to the bottle. Obviously, you can pick up bottles in the game and throw them as distractions. There's always a big, fun debate in the community of, you can use bottles and bricks as distractions, and you can also stun enemies, whether it's infected or human, with bottles by throwing them at them. The way I always do it is bottles is for distractions, because you've got that, like the actual glass smash, which I don't know if it actually matters in the game mechanics, but feels like it makes more impact. And then with bricks, something I didn't notice until my first PS3 playthrough, which was surprising to me, you can actually not just stun enemies with bricks, but you can actually melee attack them with bricks and sort of get get a bit more damage in, which I did by complete accident, because I thought I had a melee weapon equipped at one point when I was playing as Joel. I actually had my brick equipped, and he started smashing this clicker, and I didn't know you could do that for ages. So, very, very good nod to that. We do get some bits before this, though. I like the, because again, conversation about who you're going to the dance with, and says, like, Kat's not really quite an option. And the conversation of, like, but who are you going to go with? Who do you like? Well, I do actually like you, but I'm not going to tell you in this particular scene. I'd love to go to the dance with you, but I'm not going to tell you in this scene. I thought it was great. And then her kind of giving a little nod to her and Jesse's history as well. So, the other thing is, so they come across this bear that's been ripped apart by like six infected, pretty much the exact same as the game, apart from it's a deer instead of a bear, but it doesn't really make much difference. But it's the same thing of, you're out on patrol. In this, it's just Dina and Ellie. Kat's not there, and the other two aren't there, because Kat, again, is one that's mentioned in the game, but she's not actually seen on screen, so I don't know if something is going to happen to her at some point, or maybe she leaves. I don't know. You jump over like a little log or something, and then it cues this like cutscene, and they both discover this deer that's been ripped apart, and then the supermarket's still there, the truck is there as well that Dina and Ellie climb up. That was a nice little sort of nod to one of the differences between Last of Us 1 and 2, which is with 2, because Ellie's smaller and more agile, they gave her more extensive climbing mechanics, whereas, okay, Joel can climb up stuff, he can't like leap across things in the same way that Ellie can. So all really, really good video game stuff, which I really enjoyed seeing. The truck's almost like in the same position as well, so very, very good. Did you understand what Dina and Ellie were trying to say to each other apart from the bottle, and B, what did you think of the stalkers and that?
Yeah, I mean, you got that there was sort of flirting going on, I think, between the, I mean, I don't think Ellie realized, but yes, I mean, you could tell that there was something going on there, I think, certainly from Dina's point of view. And I thought it was quite sweet that, you know, because the whole first season she had those terrible sort of pun jokes that she was doing throughout, and the fact that she's kind of still collecting those.
I thought barbecue.
Was the one that I like the fact that that's a thing that they've got.
Because she had that with Riley as well, didn't she? Left Behind. So
yeah, so I like that as well. I like the fact that, you know, that's carried on. So yeah, and that relationship's really sweet. I'm looking forward to seeing where that goes. And yeah, the stuff in the supermarket I thought was interesting, you know, and I spotted the sort of game mechanics, the sort of picking up the bottle and stuff. I did spot that was a nod to a game mechanic, and the introduction of the stalkers as well as a sort of interesting thing. And the thing happens, of course, that she gets bit. I mean, thankfully nobody was around to actually see that happen, because Dina obviously doesn't know that she's immune, because she makes some comment about, you know, are you okay, did you get bit, I'm not gonna have to shoot you in the head, am I, you know.
And that lines out the game as well. There's a part where you crawl under this truck that you eventually climb over. As you're crawling under it, an infected pulls you out, you have like a little scuffle with them. Dina pulls out the gun to shoot them. And that's where you get like, oh, craft a med kit, sort of, you know, that bit comes up.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's like, oh, I hope you're not infected. I don't want to have to shoot you in the face. I thought that was very good as well. So
yeah.
Also, they make a little call out to Curtis and Viper. There's a conversation between them in the game, which is actually a little bit different. Rather than Dina saying, I'm going to watch it later with Joel, Ellie mentions she's going to watch it, because I think, what was it? In the game, Dina says, like, oh, what are you doing later, or something like that. And she says, oh, I might, because it's, you know, Curtis and Viper 2 in this case. So, hey, we like the sequel. We might try and, you know, watch the second one. But it's actually Dina in this case, which I thought was an interesting little change. So there's also the comment from Jesse on, like, hey, you look like Curtis and Viper. So thought that was fun. yeah, a lot of stuff going on in the scene. As the more horror fan person of the two of us, I really did enjoy as well, like, if you do spot it, because not always spottable, I suppose, the stalker kind of just, like, because it crawls along the wall at the back, that's where Ellie first sort of hears it, and then a bit that shows from the trailer, she's walking past these shelves and that, and you can see it, like, just behind her trailing, which again is perfectly like what a stalker does and all that sort of thing. For anybody playing the game or whatever, or wants any tips, your shotgun's your best friend, really, with these. You can take them out with other stuff. Obviously, you can exaggerate and you can throw a Molotov at them if you want. But for most infected that will run at you, shotgun to the legs, and their legs will then be gone. They'll crawl towards you, and then you can just press square and stamp on their heads. So, very, very good. But yeah, just like, as I'm watching Ellie take on this stalker, I'm like, yep, this is... fought these one or two times. And that is, yeah, they're just a bit of a bastard to deal with. So, very, very, very good. Yeah, they also do have the, I don't have it written down here, but the council scene. And they're trying to, because obviously by that point, Kat and the other two guys are gone. And they've obviously gone back and reported what's happened. I thought this was a nice little addition. And there is a little nod in the game where you're playing as Ellie walking with Dina at one point. And said, like, hey, did you ever get caught? Did you ever get called up to, like, a courthouse? Or she says something like that. And this was kind of a nice... Because you don't see this courthouse, like, setup thing in the show. So I thought that was a nice little callback. But yeah, fine that they both got kind of dismissed and whatever. So I didn't mind that. And then they get ready for New Year's. Any thoughts on the little council scene?
No, I mean, I it's interesting sort of seeing the setup of how Jackson works and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's quite a nice little scene, you know, and get a little bit more background about them. But other than that, no.
Yeah, yeah, it was good. And then on to my favourite scene of the episode. And there was someone that cried every time they watched this scene. I'm not saying it was me. But, yeah, this dance scene, someone did, but I'm not necessarily saying it was me. At a New Year's Eve party, Dina dances with Ellie and they kiss, prompting anger and a homophobic slur from Seth. After Joel attacks, Seth pushes him like straight to the ground. Ellie tells him she does not need his help and he leaves very upset. She later encounters him playing guitar on his porch and walks past in this case. The positioning, the camera work, Dina dancing, the lines between the three of the, you know, Jesse, Ellie and Dina is, it's not line for line, but it doesn't need to be. But like, you want to talk about adaption from video game accuracy. And like, this is just such a really, really nice moment between the two of them. And bits that made me laugh in here, like Dina takes Jesse's drink, downs the whole thing, and just gives it back to him. And then the yes sir bit I really, really liked as well. Isabel was so good here with the, particularly the sir yes sir bit. Of like the sort of, hey, I want to have fun, I'm sort of dismissing authority at the moment, like okay we'll deal with that later, but sort of I'm drunk, and well, I mean they're all kind of drunk and probably in the scene and whatever. But yeah, like the music, the band is here as well. A good shout out from Gustavo. If you're wondering who the older guy in the chair with the banjo is, that's cool. I can never remember his surname, but Gustavo, he's the one who actually composes most of Last of Us's music. So good, really great that he got a cameo. I saw that he posted a photo saying like, hey everybody, thanks for the nice messages. I think he said like, we did this in January 2024. I think that's what he said. Obviously these things take a long time. But yeah, really great nod to that. And interesting little change where in... it's Pearl Jam, isn't it? I think that's doing this music, which is a band that Neil and both Craig really, really like. In the game, now I didn't necessarily notice this because I was, you know, focused on what Dina and Ellie were doing. It's just like a music player playing the song, but they got like the band to be in this because they were able to, I think it was like a licensing thing or something like that before. There's some weird, like, now this isn't something that bothers me at all, but apparently, because when this song was created, it's not supposed to be in the game because the game is, the song didn't exist at the same time or something, and people were kind of like moaning about that in a weird way, and I thought, okay, that's not a problem. It doesn't matter if the song existed or didn't or whatever, just, you know, it's a really, really great scene. So, but just everything from like, how bad do you think I smell? Hot pile of garbage, and they just smile with each other, the kiss. There's even the little detail of like her brushing Ellie's hair back. She does that in the game. The hand positions are almost the same, the kiss is almost the same, where Jesse and Ellie are standing is basically exactly the same. The outfits are exactly the same. So this is like basically ripped from the game and put onto the screen, and just so well done, just really, really good. So anyway, what did you think of this dance scene?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really sweet scene, and the you know, that sort of relationship between the two of them, and it's one of those things that if it works so well in the game, why would you change it? You know, it's a scene from the game that people obviously loved, and if it works so well there, why would you make it different for this? So, you know, it sort of makes sense that you practically do it shot for shot. If, you know, it's difficult to do that with a lot of video game conversions because, you know, they don't have this sort of cinematic feel to them. But with this, if it works in the game, it's the type of thing that you can just transpose over. And I think as a TV watcher, I would never have known, having not played the game. And if you're a game watcher, it's a nice nod to the game and it's going to get you nostalgic for it. So I think it's a great way of doing it for that. And you know, Joel attacking Seth. That again, that sort of
Was Seth one of your death predictions?
I think so, yes. Yes, I think he was, because okay. he said it was sort of a nasty piece of work. So,
do you remember who, I did write them down, but do you remember who the third one was?
I can't remember, no.
Okay, while you're talking, I'll switch the notes here.
But, yeah, I mean, Joel attacking Seth. I mean, Seth clearly bigoted, nasty piece of work. And it's that sort of interesting because it also plays into the sort of Joel being overprotective stuff again, and which is clearly been rubbing Ellie the wrong way for a number of years. And is that where the sort of tension has come from? So I, yeah, you know, he sort of not letting her grow up essentially. So yeah, I thought that whole dynamic was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully Seth doesn't make it very much longer.
You've got Seth, Eugene and Mel, the three that you...
Right, predicted. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, just switch my notes back. But of course, Seth has to come along and ruin a nice moment. Let me just switch back to my notes. Yeah, by again that same bit is this entire scene is exactly pretty much the same as the game. The only little slight difference, and it's almost a funny one, when Joel pushes Seth in the game, he doesn't fall over; he just gets a little bit shoved. In this, it's like Pedro just like committed more to the role, which is interesting considering for those of you who don't know about Pedro, he's a very very strong LGBTQ ally. I think he has a trans sister as well, but he's been very very vocal about his support of that community, so having him be more extra with that bit towards a homophobic character I thought was just an interesting little kind of touch. But yeah, it's like again Joel trying here in a way of okay, she's having this nice moment with Dina, Seth comes along and disrupts things. His line is very slightly different, but I thought it was like, hey, you need to go to church, loud dykes or whatever he says, something like that. He says pretty much the same thing from the game, but he doesn't mention the church, so it's a little added line in there. And then, yeah, Ellie gets really pissed off at it. And I did see some people commenting on like, hey, with all the apocalypse and things like that, would we really still have these people around? Oh, yeah, we would. We absolutely would. There are just some people in the world that seemingly no matter what the state of the world is, of course you've got a zombie apocalypse, it's that's just something that's just ingrained in someone's brain. So yeah, they would. They would still mm-hmm. be like that, unfortunately. You wouldn't have thought, because okay, you got bigger problems than, you know, lesbians walking around, because you've got infected and all sorts of things, and you're about to seemingly have a very, very big problem in town. But yeah, unfortunately, those are still around. But hey, it's part of the story, so yeah, it works pretty well. All right, so that's that one. Unbeknownst to the... I don't have much to say about Ellie walking past Joel, particularly, unless you do.
No.
Okay.
No.
Unbeknownst to the townsfolk, infected tendrils begin to enter Jackson through a broken pipe we see earlier in the episode, as Abby and her friends arrive nearby and observe the town at a distance. If that is actually the town, I think you're supposed to think that it is, but
yes, I think it's supposed to, yeah.
So anyway, I'll leave that there. Yeah, so clearly this almost reminded me of like a Walking Dead cliffhanger, you know, when you get to sort of, and I don't mean it in a bad way, obviously you've got the season 6 finale, but
yeah.
But in a way of like, When you used to have season to season in The Walking Dead, where it was like, oh, they're at a new settlement, oops, end of the season, horde approaching, guess they're going to have to bail, kind of thing, which ended up happening a lot in The Walking Dead. Yeah. But clearly giving us a warning and all that as to a horde is about to come towards them. I couldn't quite tell on the first watch if you're supposed to think that, okay, when Ellie had the tendril in her and she cuts her wound out, not only to get rid of that, but to also I think what she's trying to do there is obviously make it look like a knife wound as opposed to a bite mark.
Yes.
So if someone sees it later, was there, because there's a problem with the pipe And what the conclusion I came to is it's both. And are we supposed to believe that, okay, the tendril which has gone down the pipe here has ended up in that pipe, or was the pipe already, because it has a problem, being infected by tendrils? But I think it's just both anyway.
Possibly. I don't know, actually.
Because you get tendrils. You saw tendrils growing in there. I didn't, on like my first watch, I didn't make the connection of Ellie's wound into the sink, into the pipe. I didn't quite make that connection.
No, I didn't.
Because when you saw, like, there's these little brown bits of tendrils in the pipe. So I was thinking, okay, because they have a problem with it, which gets pointed out by Dina, that's already been festering the whole episode anyway. But I think you may be supposed to believe it's both. So, cool. So that's the end of episode one. We have six to go, but then also a whole other season. If you'd like to write in, let us know your thoughts, feelings, questions, comments. And of course, you can write in spoiler stuff, but I'll save that for my spoiler-focused episodes if you want to do that. So for predictions and all the other stuff. And of course, if you're a TV-only person or a TV and a video game person and you want to give in your spoiler-free feedback, we'll include that in this podcast. Because the late-night ones I'm going to be doing, there's going to be no feedback bits on those because... So it's going to be me talking about the episode. Anyway, Matthew at entertainmenttalk.org, social media, eTalk, Your Care, Entertainment Talk, and his information in your show notes. Josh writes in and says, do you think part 3 will be out after season 4 if either of those things happen? So we know we're getting a season 3. Don't know that we're definitely getting a season 4. That's already been discussed and pointed out. I do think both will happen. I genuinely, aside from what Neil has said, because obviously he's focusing on Intergalactic, I think it's a case of when, not if, we get part 3. But that when won't be any time soon, because, you know, he's busy with other stuff. And I think from the content that we get from the second game, and given that we're also getting new parts as well, and, like, you know, Kat and Eugene and all those other bits and pieces... and then, like, hopefully further backstories on other characters that aren't explored as much. So you've got, like, obviously Tommy, Benjamin, and the whole Maria thing. So that's a new element as well. I think you've got plenty to do 3 seasons on this. So whether it's, like, even if it was just the game, I would still say the same thing. But given that you're also injecting new little bits as well, I think you've... Depending on how many episodes season 3 will be and how many you can get for season 4, I think you've got plenty for 3 seasons. What do you think of how that could go?
Yeah, I mean, given they're not particularly long seasons for American shows anyway, I mean, only got 7 episodes this season for this, which is, I mean, that's practically the length of a British, like, drama, you know, at this point. I mean, we've always done sort of 6 season shows, but... I think they'll make it as long as they need to make it in terms of what they do with the story and how much they want to explore other bits. Like you say, they are expanding it out. I've not played the game, as I said, so I don't know whether you could spend it over 3 seasons, but I get the impression you possibly could if that's what you wanted to do. The other option is you do 2 seasons, cover the second game, and then if the third game isn't out by then, which I think might be pushing it.
I don't think it will be out for season 4.
I suspect it wouldn't be by the time they get to season 4. But what you could do is after 3 seasons, maybe you do a Tales of Us series, which is, you know, not Joel and Ellie's story, but his other things within that universe, following other characters. You know, they've done that with various other things to various degrees of success, from sort of, you know, American Horror and Walking Dead. Maybe you could do something around that, and if they wanted to do that, or you leave it for a few more years, wait until the game's out, you could... produce the game alongside producing the TV series. I mean, that is certainly a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But that's always a little bit dangerous, but, yeah. You know.
Put it this way, though, right? Like, okay, 2025 season 2, 2027 season 3, and Intergalactic won't be out until at least 2027, if not later, because, you know, games are difficult to make. And then you then have another 2 years, so 2020... 9, gosh, 2029, yeah. For season 4 to, like, let's say, finish off game 2, I don't think, like, even from now till 2029, because, again, Neil's focused on Intergalactic, while there could be small bits of work, and there's been little rumours here and there on 3 and where exactly it's at, I mean, I highly, highly doubt that there isn't at least one notepad in Neil Druckmann's office that says something on Last of Us 3. Given that he also in the documentary about stuff has said, like, okay, I think there's one more chapter to this story, which a trilogy would make sense to me. But if you go 2025, right, season 2, 2027, both Intergalactic and season 3, I don't think there's any way, even in the 2 years after that, between season 3 and 4, that you then get a third game out as well. That's a lot of stuff to make in a very... I know it sounds like a lot of time because we're talking about 2029. But as much as, you know, Neil Druckmann's talented and all that sort of stuff, and obviously it's, you know, not just him making these things, it's other people, that's still a lot of stuff. And that's a lot of stuff that's got a lot of eyes on it. Like, you don't any of those three things, you don't rush any of those three things. Whether it's adapting the second game, launching a brand new IP, or, you know, possibly finishing The Last of Us with Part 3, you don't rush any of those three things, and Neil would know that. So yeah, that's answering that, I suppose. Abed says, David was talking about spin-offs, and Matt almost didn't comment. Matt, would you want any spin-offs for The Last of Us? If so, what? I'm weirdly not as, like, I know you've said that as, like, an option, because you're just discussing, like, what they could do with seasons and stuff. And I'm not saying this is in the same line as, like, hey, Walking Dead started doing a bunch of stuff and it sort of trailed off, because you're talking about two different beasts with, you know, Naughty Dog, HBO, Neil Druckmann, Last of Us, as opposed to whoever's at AMC and what they're doing with Walking Dead. Obviously, there's no video game to attach that to. So you're dealing with two completely different calibers of talent and care and production and money. but with Walking Dead, it just kind of... Look, I like a lot of the spin-offs. I thought World Beyond was excellent. I really liked the Rick and Michonne thing. Fear was great for a bit. I still haven't actually seen the final season. But, like, when I look at something like Star Wars or Star Trek, for example, there is, like, okay, you've got a galaxy full of characters. You can make things like, you know, Andor, and then do the all the other different spin-offs, and you can kind of do whatever you want as long as, like, you've got Skeleton Crew, and then you've got the other things, like Mandalorian as well. I never quite saw Walking Dead that way, because it just has, like, outside of the main group, let's call it, you have to make a bunch of completely new characters, and that's not really what Walking Dead was supposed to be. That's not the way that I see The Last of Us either. I mean, okay, if they said, like, we're going to do a Tales of the Last of... Not that it would be called that, but that's an example. Obviously, I would check it out and I would watch it. I wouldn't be... I just simply wouldn't be as into that, I don't think, as the main thing we've got here. Yeah. And not that I think HBO is going to do an AMC of, like, okay, this is the only thing we've got, make as much of it as possible, which is different between HBO and AMC. Because HBO's got, like... way more IP to use, whereas AMC, even though they got the Anne Rice stuff, they don't really have that much. They don't have as broad an IP available to them that Warner Brothers do. Like, they're about to do the Harry Potter thing and all the other high prestige dramas they've got. So I also don't think HBO/Warner Brothers would see it that way. Now, if Neil and Craig kept coming to them every 2 years and saying we got another season, I'm sure that they would take as many as possible, as long as, like, they made sense. But I've not, honestly, as much thinking as I've done about The Last of Us, which is obviously a lot, I've never really sat down and thought of, like, a Tales thing where it's, hey, John and Claire or something. I'm just thinking of two completely random names, like John and Claire, and are they going to survive the world of The Last of Us? I've never really quite thought of that before. So... I don't know. It depends what happens in the future, I suppose. So,
yeah. I mean, I think you're probably right. You've also got to bear in mind with HBO, they were a little burnt by the Game of Thrones thing as well, with what happened with the main show of that. So, I mean, yes, they've done various spin-offs, but they're working from other source material for those spin-offs. I mean, it really would very much depend, I think, with The Last of Us, it would need to be driven by Craig and Neil. And it is whether they would want to do something, whether either of them have got any ideas for other stuff. If they may just go, you know what, we're going to leave it for a few years until the third game comes out, and then we'll come back to it. And they may decide to do that, and I think that would be perfectly acceptable as well. You know, as you say, it's not as if they're short of IP over at HBO and Warner Brothers.
DC as well, yeah.
So. Yeah, and I mean, they've got all the DC stuff launching. You've got the Lantern series coming, which is coming to HBO as well. So, you know, they're going to have a lot of stuff to play around with. And I entirely respect Neil and Craig for saying, no, we are not going past where, you know, the game ends. You know, but if another game comes out and they want to take it further, sure. Mm-hmm. You know, or if they want to spend the three seasons on the second game, fair enough. You know, I mean, they've proved that they can do it really, really well. So we'll sort of have to wait and see with that. I'm not as massively into the idea of a sort of spin-off thing. Like you say, I would watch it. I think it's an option for them, but I'm not.
Just feels like a different beast than The Walking Dead. So
yeah, no, totally. And I mean, The Walking Dead dramatically went away from the source material. I mean, it doesn't end in the same way. It doesn't end in the same place. They killed massively different characters. It's a completely different beast, The Walking Dead, to Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know,
it's also Sony involved in this as well. It's not just like...
And Sony aren't going to want to have something that, as well as Neil and Craig, Sony are not going to want to have something that goes out that kills their golden goose, you know. So there is that. As well. So I think whatever it is, if they did go down the route of a spin-off, it would be something I think that would be fairly well measured. You know, because the entire reason that there's been so much respect for this is how it's handled the conversion from a game and how it's handled the source material. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think to trample over that would be a mistake. And
yeah.
There is an argument to say that doing some sort of spin-off might do that. So I don't know. I mean, as I was mentioning more as they could potentially do something like that.
Because yeah, you're just talking about options. So
yeah, it gives them an option of doing something like that. Whether they would actually want to do that is an entirely different thing.
Who knows? Maybe after, like, they might want to adapt Intergalactic if that's successful as well.
Totally.
Just saying, if you want to do Uncharted again but ignore the film, you can do that as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, Uncharted would be another thing which I think could work brilliantly as a TV series. You know, if you actually faithfully adapted that rather than doing what they did with the film, which was awful. So,
yeah. So, all right, let's move on from that. Beth says, to ask you both, does Matt think the show needs and does he want four seasons? Same for David. And do you think The Last of Us will have more than three games? I don't see it as more than, like, unless you want to do, again, Left Behind-esque sort of DLC stuff. When Neil did say, like, okay, one more chapter to this story and that would conclude it as a trilogy, I do believe that that is, like, the case. That doesn't mean they can't do other DLC or even other game modes or whatever after that. Of course, yes, I would want four seasons, not just because I love what we're getting, but it's something that's fascinating to me. For already such a big and detailed game, it actually gives you the chance to just expand it even more and to just, like, create more breathing room for other parts. I mean, the amount of times, I don't know if this is a budget thing for certain games, the amount of times I've listened to a game director, not just from Naughty Dog, but for example, there was, like, the director of the Spider-Man games. The amount of times directors kind of almost sneakily say, like, hey, we wanted to do this, but we ran out of time. We wanted to do this other bit and this other... Because there's a lot of ideas that are floated around in game development that. But the amount of times they almost kind of hint, like, hey, we couldn't quite do that for certain reasons, or we ran out of time a little bit. And, you know, these games are... big enough and all that kind of thing. But then when you do get to, particularly if you've got the same person involved, you can go, right, I made this game here and I get to adapt it into multiple seasons. Those other things, those other bits that we couldn't do or didn't have time for or whatever else, we can then actually put those in. So I think, because even though we looked at this before as like, okay, season two, season three, half one, half two, you know, the different halves of the game. But then giving you almost, I don't know if bonus episodes is the word I look for, but like the opportunity for more time with the fourth season, I think will only sort of benefit those extra bits and pieces, those ideas. But in terms of my answer on more than three games, it feels like, again, I think more when than if Neil does a third one, that will be it for The Last of Us, I think. So, because I don't see it being a game where it's like Last of Us 3, 4, 5, 6, you know.
No, sort of. No.
So, yeah, again, unless there's like another attempt at an online game at some point or DLC bits, for the core three games, I think it will just be three, and I think that makes sense. What do you think for both of these questions?
Yeah, I mean, I think because it's such a narrative structure, that game, I suspect that you're probably going to have three, and I think you're probably right, it is probably a case of if not of when, not if. Hopefully it doesn't end up being a Half-Life 3 situation, but I mean, yeah, I think that is probably quite likely that you will at some point, but not soon, get a third game. As to the structure of, you know, the TV series, whether we do get a full season, that very much depends on how they've broken down the story. And I don't know that at the moment. You know, it depends if you'll be able to tell, I think, probably by the end of this next season, where it ends.
The third and one,
where
yeah.
that is. Yeah. yeah. Where that is. Well, by the end of the second season, you'll have some idea because of how far through the game it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of plotting. You know, if that's only a third of the way through the game, then yeah, it's entirely possible that you're going to get season three and season four, because, you know, they can do a third and a third, a third and a third. But if they're halfway through, then you're kind of probably thinking, okay, well, they're probably going to do one more season then. So, I mean, I don't know. And I don't know the game, so I can't really comment on how many seasons you're going to get out of it. You will probably have a better idea by the time we get to the end of the second season how that's going to end up getting broken up.
Yeah. I think if I was to put a small time stamp on three, and, you know, I'm not involved in the development at all, I do genuinely think some point past 2030, which, gosh, that feels like such a long time away. not that the game wouldn't be announced before that, but because, okay, let's say
in terms of
I'm really just I'm looking at Intergalactic as like not the thing that's in the way, but like the other thing Neil has to focus on. And again, like, okay, let's say Intergalactic is a success, might want to do a second one of that. And then you have there's also other rumors of like other directors, because sometimes it feels like Neil, not that he's like the only person that works in Naughty Dog, but he's the only person's name that gets mentioned most of the time. There was rumors like the other week that what was it, the Uncharted Lost Legacy director, like they might be working on something else as well. So, you know, you might get other games and other things as well at some point.
Yeah.
So and the last one we have here is from Callum, who says, first time, long time, welcome in. How many times have you almost slipped and accidentally spoiled the game for David, or have you done this off mic? That's not happened off mic. I've not accidentally spoiled anything. In terms of when I've been in the middle of a sentence, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, if I pause at any point and it sounds like I've forgotten what to say or gotten stuck, it's because I'm trying to think of the most spoiler-free way to explain something rather than like accidentally slipping. I mean, we've come this far. I don't think that's gonna happen now. I don't think that'll happen. Because there's multiple times even when I pause and I'm like, okay, I'm about to explain something. It feels like something spoiler free in my brain. Like when I was talking about the sniper scene, and then thinking, because there's so much that goes on in this game, and I look and think, when I'm about to talk about something, could that hint towards a bigger spoiler? Could that be, you know, have I got that right? So that's just going to be the bits that I pause and just think about kind of what I'm saying. Or what I'll do alternatively, which I've done a couple of times in this podcast, is just stop my sentence and then just ask David what he thinks of the scene. So that's also an option as well. But no, I've not accidentally spoiled it off mic for David or anything. So
no.
Because, yeah, you wouldn't have had those conversations, I guess. So, it's still, again, I know you're not in the Last of Us circles, as I call it. I do still find it genuinely remarkable that you don't know anything about it after all this time. That's actually kind of impressive to me. So, yeah, nice. All right, cool. That's it for this episode. We'll be back, of course, for episode 2. Even though it was a lot for me to do, I still plan on doing the same podcast in the same structure, the same ways, the same planning. So look out for those episodes at certain points. Look out for the same routine next week. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org. TV, games, films, main night podcasts. Should have some film reviews over the next couple of days. Again, depends on if I can make it there in time and this and that, because you can't just go whenever you want to. So, it's also is the Daredevil finale out as well?
Yes, dropped today, I think. So,
yeah, got that too. That kind of snuck up on me today.
Yeah.
So, that's another thing to review at some point as well. TV, games, films, main night podcast, entertainmenttalk.org, and podcast platforms, Entertainment Talk. For all those things, you can support us, of course, by listening to more episodes, finding us on podcast platforms, word of mouth, social media. I'm very sure in the next week or this week you came across at least one person talking about The Last of Us. So if you can, please mention our podcast when those conversations come up. If someone meant somebody podcast on, please tell them Better Said Podcast. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options. Look for that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, Geek Town Radio Tuesdays, geektown.co.uk. David, that's yours. What's going on over there?
Well, we're getting into a fairly busy period. It's a little bit the calm before the storm right now. we are waiting for what we call Bloodbath Week, which is when they renew and cancel all the TV shows. So we're still sort of gearing up for that. But we have started to get a few more cancellations come in. So it's always worth checking geektown.co.uk and seeing what stuff has been canned and what has been renewed. You were on the podcast this week, which is episode 456. You talked a bit about Time, Bella Ramsey's other, not that recent show, but yeah, that one. We talked a bit about Daredevil, Doctor Who returning, Last of Us. We did cover a little bit on there, but not obviously in this much detail. Black Mirror as well. We talked about Hacks, Bosch, some of the cancellations and renewals, the Harry Potter TV casting, and we did run through on that episode all the sort of pre-game stuff to the Bloodbath, so where things stand with the US TV right now and what has been cancelled and what has been renewed and all that kind of thing. So there's a lot of packed stuff in episode 456, so it is worth going to check that episode out, Geek Town Radio, wherever you get your podcasts. And as I say, keep an eye on the site for the next couple of weeks, because geektown.co.uk is going to have probably quite a lot of updates of renewals and cancellations and stuff on there.
Nice. So, yeah, keep your eyes out for Tuesdays, Geek Town Radio and geektown.co.uk. For all other stuff as well, of course, if you missed my spoiler-free, No Return run on The Last of Us, where I did deal with some stalkers, you can check that out on YouTube, as well as some other just random things that I clip and record and whatever else. That's called Entertainmental Plays over on YouTube. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you for whatever happens next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Recording stopped.